Hi, everybody. I'm Daryl Cagle, and this is the Cagle Cast, where we're all about political cartoons. And we have two excellent cartoonists with us, Graham McKay and yes. Taylor Jones. And we're going to talk about China and China cartoons. And we're going to go through the work of Luoji, who's the English language China daily newspaper cartoonist that we syndicate here at Cagle Cartoons. And we have for the last 23 years. And I think that will be very interesting to see the Chinese view on things. And we'll just spend most of this podcast talking about Luoji's cartoons and whether that surprises us or whether we've come to have the same kind of attitude as he does. Well, this is one of yours, Graham. I think it's a nice one.
Yeah, this is actually from years ago, from the first incarnation of the Donald Trump years. And we all know what's happened in the second term. So like so many editorial cartoons that I drew in the first term, they apply to the second.
And, I like how the cannonball breaks America. That's cute.
Yep. Yeah, I've seen other people draw like missiles and various other things, and it's the same kind of deal. You know, you're damaging, you know, the consumer in the United States or in Canada, in our case, with terror. Those are the ones who are paying this tax, basically. And that's the confused thing with Donald Trump. He seems to think that it's these countries that are the recipients of tariffs that are paying, but it's not. It's the American consumer.
Taylor, this is one of yours.
Well, this is an illustration, not so much a cartoon. This is for Hoover Digest. But I did this a number of years ago, but obviously with rare earths in the news and China having a sort of corner on the market. And that's what this was about, really. The little Chinese inscription in the top left means something, but I forget what it means.
And here you have Xi and Poo. He was depicted as Poo on the internet, and that got to be a thing for a while, and it was banned throughout China. They right. were deleted on things, and all the cartoonists were drawing him as Winnie the Pooh.
So this
one
this
of the things I think that'll be interesting when we go through Luoji is that Chinese cartoonists never draw their president. And I think that's a measure of democracy around the world, or free press around the world, is that in just about every country where there is not a free press, cartoonists are not allowed to draw the president. You never saw Fidel Castro drawn in Cuba. Our two cartoonists in Singapore say they can draw anything they want as long as it's not about Singapore. It's just, it's kind of a universal measure of freedom of the press.
I wonder too, Daryl, if there's a West versus East and Middle East sort of culture thing to it as well, that it's never been that way. You know,
all those Middle East countries, they can't draw their presidents.
Right. So it's nothing new for them. So it's almost like you can't draw Muhammad.
I mean, I think it's an ingenious. I mean, it's interesting to see that, though. I mean, because we're so here in the West, it's almost like it's an everyday thing. You draw either Donald Trump or we're drawing the Prime Minister of Canada. It's just an unusual thing, like to think to do some kind of editorial cartoon without some kind of depiction of the leader. It's just a very odd thing. And I find that,
well, you know, all through the Cold War in the East Bloc countries, they would create characters like little kings or little generals that you knew were the president but were not the president. They developed their own strange language.
Daryl, you think that Trump's coming after us before sometime during his term, that editorial depictions by cartoonists of Trump are not going to be news? Seems you tell us that editors don't seem to want anything to do with Trump when it comes to cartoons.
We introduced a no Trump alternate front page for our website. We were getting so many complaints from editors about all you have is Trump cartoons.
Well, that's kind of, you know, it's sort of funny in a way, because Trump has made himself so dominant in the news. How can there not be Trump newspaper full of Trump Trump things? Trump cartoons, Trump editorials. He's impossible to escape.
I suppose if you draw him, you know, with nice abs and, you know, big muscles like certain editorial cartoonists do in America, I'm not going to name names, but that seems to be appropriate. And certainly that poor artist in Colorado who depicted him in such a way in that portrait that, you know, Trump got all upset about. Don't depict him in such a way. But I think Taylor makes a very good point. Like, are we headed that way where, you know, your president doesn't want depictions of him? And is he going to like crack down on it? It's kind of weird that we're in that situation, but I think it's a valid concern.
If he starts suing us, I mean, who among us is going to be able to afford to defend ourselves? And, you know, if I exactly. Not trying to be paranoid, but if I got some letter about threatening me from who's this guy, Ed Martin, who likes to, if it works for Trump, who likes to send threatening letters to everybody that lawsuits are going to follow, you know, I'd certainly call you right away, Daryl.
It would be reassuring for us to have big egos, but I'm afraid we're too insignificant to to be much of a threat.
I fear you're right, Daryl.
You know, with Trump being on the news.
Oh, isn't again, this nice?
Well, thank you. Again, another illustration for Hoover Digest. And this is a long story, really, you know.
We got to move fast, Taylor. We got so much to go through.
No, I don't mean a long story about the illustration. I mean, this is kind of a long-running thing with China-U.S. trade. So you can move on to the next one.
Okay. Well, this is a lovely drawing.
Thank you. Again, it means something up there in the top right. I don't know what.
So, Graham, here's another one that I thought was lovely. Tell us about this one.
So, as you all know, we have many Trump tariffs that have been imposed on Canada. This one, our auto sector, obviously is in jeopardy with the Mexican auto sector. He wants to bring manufacturing back to the United States. I can understand that. So we have to get used to the whole realignment of the supply and everything. And the fact that autos, when they're manufactured, go across the border like umpteen times, up to 10 times. When you get parts manufactured here and then they're put into cars, they cross the border many, many times. It actually becomes less of a American-made car than a North American car. When you factor in, there's three countries that factor into making your average American automobile. So what I imagine here is that he's smashing up the Canadian-made car, and in the debris of everything, we finally get what I think is a wonderful thing in having electric cars made available in the end. We cannot purchase Chinese electric cars. You can buy electric cars now in other parts the world for $20,000 American. It's a wonderful thing. They seem to work very well. It's kind of an ingenious way to overcome the problem with fossil fuel generated vehicles. We can't get them in Canada. I would love to get my hands on a Chinese made EV vehicle because one, they're affordable. And
well,
two,
you know, we just had those huge fires here in California, and we've got more electric cars here than any place else in the world, I guess, except China. And they have made the biggest toxic, awful things from their electric car corpses that costs a bloody fortune for this team of toxic waste people to try to get rid of. And they burn like bombs.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to live next door to one.
Daryl?
You've got to also consider that the power that is generated to get the electricity to power these things too is an issue as well. And that sometimes means coal. It's not coal here, but you know, natural gas and other fossil fuels.
Yeah, and here in California, to charge up your car to go the same distance as if you bought gasoline costs about 2/3 as much as the gasoline. Mm. And so all those negatives, is that worth 1/3 of the cost of your gasoline? I don't see them as a value.
Daryl.
This is a nice looking cartoon, Graham. Beautiful dragon. Yeah. I don't know what the hell is going on with it.
This is a very recent one? No.
So who's this Paul Chang guy?
I need to explain. Paul Chang was a candidate for the Liberal Party of Canada. This is a recent story, actually. This is only from a few weeks ago. And he was running in our recent federal election under the flag of, there's our new prime minister, Mark Carney. And he's just been elected to a minority government. And he had a candidate in Toronto by the name of Paul Chang, who, if I get the story right, I believe he was threatening his conservative opponent that he was going to turn him in to the Chinese police. Now, we've had a thing going on in Canada with foreign interference, much like what you've had in the United States. But the revelation has been that we actually have Chinese police stations activity happening within Canada, which acts to report on, I guess, bad citizens of the Chinese diaspora who are in Canada. And they threaten lives of Chinese Canadians, of newly come migrants from China to Canada, and they're a threatening group of people. So you're dealing with a subculture that's within Canada. And here is one Chinese candidate, you know, threatening another Chinese candidate who happened to be Canadian, but under this knowledge that, well, I'll get you with our, you know, our former homeland security system. And it's all enveloped in the whole foreign interference problem that's been plaguing Canada for the last few years in the last election. There have been MPs, members of parliament, who have been threatened, and it's all come out in investigations that we've had over the past 4 years. And it seemed to be happening in the
That's
the
very scary
election.
Stuff. I've heard it of people being picked up in New York by these Chinese police.
And it's sort of makeshift police stations, right, where,
Yep. And it's, foreign interference comes in many different forms. And it's not just China. It's also India here in Canada. It's Iran. And this is what comes with multiculturalism now in our Western populations. This is, we live in a globalized world. And so these former countries of citizens in our countries, they act to interfere with their lives, and they're constantly spying. And I guess we in Canada do the same thing with these foreign countries. You in the United States do the same thing. So it's something that's happened, but it seems to be more prevalent in a society like the U.S. or Canada that are more open into taking foreigners.
Well, maybe Trump's going to stamp out multiculturalism. Maybe you want to rethink that 51st state thing.
I think that's for a different time, girl. I don't think we need to go into that.
Okay, very good.
Let's just obsess ourselves.
All right.
This is good.
This is a lovely cartoon.
Yeah.
I work for the Hamilton Spectre, but right now I'm in Ottawa. So I was actually at Parliament today, and this is our Parliament buildings, and this is a panda, which is, chewing our Peace Tower like it's a bone
bamboo.
Or something, a chicken bone or something. But this is just to sort of illustrate the foreign interference of China into the Canadian political system. I think it's pretty
clear. I think it's great. There. Beautiful cartoon.
Thanks. Now, that's the interesting thing, and I think Taylor probably agreed. And there's an example of a dragon that we've used to personify China, and the panda is always a nice thing. But I've also been told that these personifications are kind of demeaning to Chinese people, especially the dragon. Like, it's a very cliched kind of thing. And I've been told by one of my editors at the Toronto Star to stop using dragon motifs, which is interesting. Yeah, but I don't hear that from other people, but he's heard it from reporters that work in the Toronto Star and people, letter writers, that stop using dragons. And I think, okay, well, I haven't received that edict from anyone, but the panda bears.
Well, Graham, don't you think that, I mean, that sounds like a little bit of silly wokeness to me, even if people are offended, because the reason why is that you can bet that the cliches for other that cartoonists around the world use, Uncle Sam, cowboys, all kinds of beavers
in
Canada.
Beavers in Canada.
Maple syrup. Yeah. All kinds of we all rely on that. I don't know how we can do our jobs if we don't have our cliches. It's just the way it is, and we don't have to like it, but there it is.
I think people are trying to look at racist things. I don't fully see it, but I'm thinking, people have to complain.
So I was doing the State Department.
I guess some people take more
seriously. State Department speaking tour in China, and they would send me to colleges. And I went to this one college, and I explained to them that we have different symbols for China. We use dragons, and we use panda bears, and we can use the Great Wall of China, and we can use that guy who's standing in front of the tank with his hand up in Tiananmen Square. And so I thought, well, that's a provocative thing to say in a college. And the students started squirming. This one in the front started squirming the most. And he put his hand up and he had a question. And I said, well, all right. And I said, you have a question? And he says, what kind of dragon? That's a true story.
And your answer?
I don't know what kind of dragon. I don't know any kinds of dragons.
This is a great concept, your cartoon here, Daryl.
Chinese.
Oh, well, thank you. This is the Rare Earths. And this one is Mao taking it out on George Washington. It's what they do. They devalue their currency. They make their stuff sell best. They've been eating up all those dollars, but they're not tasting so good anymore.
That's good. That's a good composition, too.
This is the South China Sea. I draw lots of China. Mm-hmm. China's in the news all the time. Here's Trump, and he's nice China, so nice, bad China, bad, but nice, bad, nice. That's kind of what our relationship is with Trump.
It is. I don't get that about him. Like, he goes on about how horrible they are, and then he's making peace, or not peace deals, but trade
And he
deals
talks about how nice they are, and nice conversation.
He's
a
good friend of his,
Yeah.
Well, and also, I was hacked by Chinese hackers, so this was my self-portrait when I was hacked by Chinese hackers. I had a white beard then. You remember that? And
that's the lovely thing about the dragons is that they have that like wavy kind of thing. It's not like some of these other dragons you see where it's a
yeah,
big,
I like
fat
the wavy
dinosaur
thing.
Body.
So I drew this cartoon 20 years ago. It's got the couple and the kids are smooching. The wife says, yes, the boys saw that Brokeback Mountain movie and they're playing cowboys. So 20 years ago, now like 18 years ago, I went on speaking tour in China. And again, you know, talking to the colleges and, you know, they don't respond like an American audience does. You never know when they're going to laugh and why they laugh. Or they'll sit stoically through all the places where you think they should laugh. As I do like a PowerPoint presentation. You know, they would laugh randomly, and I would. There was a kid in the front row. I asked him, "Why are they laughing?" And he'd say, "You drew a pig. Pigs are funny." And I adjusted my presentation and put in more pigs. Anyway, I got to this Brokeback Mountain cartoon, and it goes up on the screen, and everybody in the class, like a touchdown at a football game, their arms go up, and they go, "Yeah!" It was crazy, and it was loud. And I thought, what the hell? And I asked this same kid in the front, why are they doing that? And he says, movie by Chinese director.
Oh, that's right.
You know, I think that's kind of crazy. There's something scary about China.
I don't suppose this is going to be broadcast in China, is it?
Why not? Okay, I'm getting into the Luoji cartoons. And what we'll do is we'll just skim through them and you tell me what they bring to mind and what you think. Mm-hmm. And I think Luoji's an excellent cartoonist, but he is definitely a foreign cartoonist to American eyes. And
how dare he use Uncle Sam there?
Well, you know, they think of Uncle Sam differently around the world. For us, Uncle Sam is an everyman. Mm-hmm. Around the world, he is all America, including the government and what people think, as though that's all one thing in one personality.
Well, what do you expect? We have parades with Uncle Sam's on stilts, so the image gets around there.
So that's, you see Uncle Sam.
That's a great, I love that. It's a good cartoon.
Oh.
You know, I can see American cartoonists drawing this kind of thing, addicted to spending on one thing or another. Or
drugs.
And again, I think this is typical of cartoons around the world.
Yeah, well.
Poor Uncle Sam injecting drugs.
Yes. Because the government's addicted to spending, addicted to war, yeah. Addicted to this, addicted to that.
All right. Well,
I've seen a couple dozen of those.
Well, we are kind of an addictive country, you know.
Well, I like what he's done here with the military-industrial complex, because it is an addiction that we've become addicted to in Canada and we've contributed to, but we're cut off now. It's like we're thinking about buying F-35s. From the U.S., but you got to be nice to us if you expect us to buy F-35s. Well, why are you throwing all these tariffs on us, right? So, you know, I think Trump has forgotten that the military-industrial complex has been very good for the economy of the United States. And I think he's killing it right now. He's killing the military-industrial complex. And it's really hurt the U.S.
Senator Mitch McConnell, before he stepped down as Republican leader, kept pointing out that all the weapons that Ukraine was buying from us were keeping our arms manufacturers very happy, and a lot of people employed, and a lot of money was being made.
Yeah. The complaint is also made that we don't contribute to NATO, and I agree with Mr. Trump, we don't. But when we do contribute, we're also contributing to the military-industrial complex, because the Americans won't take us and purchase from Europe or any other country. It's always through the United States. So, you know, we contribute in that way, even though we're below the 2% threshold.
Here he drew a Canada cartoon.
Yes.
This is almost a Steve Sack looking Uncle Sam.
It is. Poor maple leaf.
I thought this one was nice.
Yeah, well done.
Also, can we go back on that one? That's the rocket. The rocket is launching to the ground. I see.
Okay.
That's not going
to
work.
It took me a while to figure out, but it's good.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Boy, the Chinese have a lot of presence in the universities. I would imagine that's something that Trump's going after next.
Yes, we already is.
You know, Graham, you got to consider, as you list your complaints against Trump from the Canadian point of view, that half of America didn't vote for Trump, including about 95% of the cartoonists. And, you know, we're worse off from all this than the Canadians are, I think.
No, and I think a lot of Americans were looking back to the first term and thinking, well, he said a lot of that the same stuff that he said before the second term. And he wasn't really serious, but he really is serious this time. And we are about to be really hurt. And I don't think if we were to rewind the tape and tell Americans, do you really want like your president to be talking about making Canada the 51st state? I don't think Americans would have gone for that, even the ones who are voting for Trump.
Well, there's that U.S. News and World Report. I guess it's not called that. It's just U.S. News reporter who back in 2016, she said that the left and the press separately are they should be taking Trump seriously, not literally. And I think that's still, although maybe now it's both. You got to think literally and seriously.
Yeah, it's certainly up from the first term, let's just say. But who knows? Who knows where we'll be a year from now? It's scary, actually. Yeah. Sure likes the Uncle Sam, huh?
Well,
you know, Uncle Sam really is prevalent around the world. And also Superman seems to be almost as much a symbol of America. And
the Statue of Liberty, of course.
Statue of Liberty.
Yes. Well, although Statue of Liberty has a little sense of liberty to it that's a little bit different than This Is America. Mm-hmm. But there's also McDonald's. And it's interesting to me because we'll get cartoons that will have golden arches in them that is supposed to be America in some out of context thing. And it won't make any sense to Americans. I mean, to Americans, yeah. McDonald's is hamburgers that are too expensive and kind of annoying. I mean, it doesn't mean America to us. These cartoons make no sense at all. But we get the foreign cartoonists sending us these that just, I have to explain that.
At the same time, it's been a big thing around the world when, for instance, the first McDonald's opens up in China, the first McDonald's opens up in Russia. It's kind of understandable that it has become a different kind of symbol to a lot of people, not to mention foreign cartoonists, that it does represent America.
Well, you can understand it, but at the same time, have to explain to them that no American editors are going to print that because even they don't get it.
So I'm going to make sure I sort of understand this one here. He's got the rattlesnake with a Klan hat, and but the snake is wrapped around, appears to be Chinese. So, and then with Trump as the snake charmer. Have I got that right, Daryl?
Yes. And, you know, around the world, they really love Klan hats. And actually, American cartoonists love Klan hats, too. And if you draw a Klan hat, your cartoon will not get printed. Editors, they just don't print Klan hats. Even when the news is the Klan in Virginia, they don't want the Klan hats. But the cartoonists love Klan hats. They love blood. They love bodily fluids. They love lots of Nazi paraphernalia. And that doesn't get printed. And
well, may I ask, do you put Klan hats in your cartoons, Daryl or Taylor even? I mean, I have
Klan hats.
Very provocative, let's say.
I've done a lot of cartoons that haven't been published.
I remember I put a Klan hat on one of our former conservative leaders, and I got all kinds of trouble for that. All kinds of trouble. And this is going back 20 years ago, and it affected me so much that I'm very sparing. That and blood. I don't like putting blood in my cartoons, and Klan hats are another thing that I'm very careful about not doing unless I really have to.
Over the years, a number of times I've been asked to kind of clean up the blood by editors. Okay, not so much. You got to get, so I have to white it out.
Yeah, interesting.
We do get a lot of blood in cartoons, and they don't get printed.
Does any
it's
blood,
not something
we,
that...
Sometimes a tincture of blood is absolutely necessary. Does that nix it as well, Daryl?
Yes, a little bit of blood. You got a sword, a little bit of blood on the sword. They're not going to have it.
You know, sometimes I think that your editors are the last prudes in America.
Yeah, I think you're right. I tend to put blood on hands sometimes for the old saying, you got blood
bloody
on your
hands.
Kind of expression.
You know, you got blood on your hands from this or that.
easy sort of expression. But I think that's doable, right?
Can't do sad.
I've done it, but I do recognize that when I do it, it's not going to get reprinted.
Wow.
Even bloody hands?
Sad.
Yeah, bloody hands, any blood.
Okay.
Cartoonists also love to draw people peeing. And dogs peeing and puddles of pee.
It happens every day, Daryl. Multiple times a day.
Well,
we love Pinocchio's.
I like this cartoon. This is a new twist on Pinocchio. I like it.
Luigi does a whole lot of Pinocchio's.
Well, there's another one. We got Mr. Moneybags from Monopoly Game.
Yeah, Uncle Pennybags,
He's kind of a symbol for America.
Yeah.
For wealth, right? Yeah.
Yes, for wealth. The ruling class, the bourgeoisie. We do lots of cavemen as well.
Yeah. the old shadow cliche here. Nice.
Yeah. It's funny because he can't, you know, China's got a lot of debt, but I guess he can't do that, can he? Have a China.
He doesn't draw anything critical of China. I'm just including his cartoons about the USA, but he does a lot on Taiwan and Hong Kong when they were protesting. I thought were pretty disturbing and very Chinese point of view that I guess you should expect.
Oh, well, you know what? When China becomes the number one economy and maybe the number one military power, it's going to seem pretty strange if they're still, if Luo Ji and any other Chinese cartoonists, that it's all still going to be anti-US, you know, where it's one thing for the United States to be the most powerful country in the world and have cartoonists in other parts of the world where they can't make fun of their own leaders, their own country. But it's another thing, if they're on top, it's going to be very strange.
Yeah.
Good boomerang cartoon.
When I was doing the speaking tours in China, State Department told me the audience would get the point by just seeing your drawings of Bush and Obama, that, well, we've never seen a drawing of Xi. And I think they did get that point. It was kind of shocking. A bunch of them would ask me, do you feel safe going back to America after having drawn these things?
So he's critical of Taiwan as well, like that last one that you had, that looked like one that was critical of.
I didn't put in the Taiwan and Hong Kong cartoons. I just put in China's view of America. We have a theme.
The speared bats or something that he really likes.
Well, you know, Americans do a heck of a lot of clubs and cavemen as well.
Daryl, do you have any sense from Luo Ji that his cartoons are appreciated by readers of the China Daily? Is he like a star? I mean, the China Daily is probably the biggest newspaper in the world, isn't it?
It's one of the biggest English language ones. But they, you know, China's pretty colossal. They've got a number of other bigger newspapers in Chinese language. And there are a number of cartoonists in China, although I don't know of any other English language cartoonists in China. And a lot of the cartoons, to my eye, are kind of not making much sense. And Luo Ji understands Western kind of cartoon construction.
I like, just technically, I like how he's drawn this. And of course, I like the cartoon. There are so many. I'm sure I've drawn cartoons, and perhaps both of you have too, where where statues are being pulled down, whether it's Confederate statues or, of course, the Saddam Hussein, that when his statue was pulled down in Baghdad.
It's become a standard now.
Yeah.
Well, I can sympathize with a lot of these cartoons from my point of view, because he's criticizing in the same way that we Canadians are criticizing the Trump administration, right? So, but at the same time, I'm also on the American side, because, you know, China's a communist country and they've been horrible for human rights and we've been embroiled in our own problems with China. But a lot of the stuff here, it resonates with me, but he's a bit of a propagandist for the Chinese regime, which I struggle with looking at some of this.
I think that's
true. Well, you know, he's essentially a spokesman for the Chinese regime, because newspaper's owned by the government and it's a spokesperson for the government.
Well, I hate to tell, I mean, I admire the work, but he's a propagandist. He's much like some of the guys that you have as propagandists for the Trump administration here. And you have a few of them here in the U.S.
Yes.
So where do you draw the line on propagandist? If you went to work for a conservative paper and you're doing Ben Garrison kind of cartoons, are you a propagandist? I mean, that's what that newspaper will print. If you drew something else,
the point. They're missing the general point that we're supposed to go after the most powerful, and the most powerful happens to be the guy that Mr. Garrison champions. So he's not exactly a satirist in that way. He's a propagandist, right? And same with this fellow that we have from the People's Republic of China. So
I can speak to that a little bit from my work with Hoover Digest, because now it's a very and Hoover Digest is done. The publication folded this last issue, and I was their sole illustrator for 26 years. And now I had a great deal of fun skewering Barack Obama and Joe Biden, very end of Bill Clinton's term with them. But I had to go easier on George W. Bush, and I didn't like doing that. It was certainly true as well with Trump, although with the Hoover Institution, which published the Hoover Digest, they were a really kind of mixed feelings about Trump, because Trump the traditional Hoover institution outlook is being Reaganomics, Milton Friedman, that kind of economics, and of course, neocon conservative foreign policy. Mm-hmm. And Trump has very much challenged both of those notions. And the Hoover Institution tried dancing around all of that. But I'll tell you, there are a lot of Trump pieces I drew for Hoover Digest that I've not posted with you because...
Well, you know, the classic story you hear from editorial cartoonists is that they got in trouble for drawing the guy who's a friend of the publisher that he plays golf with. Everybody that has a job is working under somebody's thumb. You know, now with our syndicate, we don't tell people what to draw, but very definitely if they don't draw what editors want and their stuff doesn't get published anywhere, their cartoon has failed by the measure of wanting to communicate with your audience, you got no audience. We're all under some kind of a thumb.
That's true.
I mean, I think there's partisanship that I have a big problem with sometimes. And I see it more in the United States. You're either a Democrat or Republican. And it shows. And I get that. But it's going against the guy who's in control of the power. And it doesn't matter whether a Republican Democrat. They both become corrupt in time. And you know, it happened, you know, Biden, you know, he became a little bit corrupt. Trump obviously is very corrupt, but they all become bad eventually. And it's up to us to, like, you know, draw it all out.
Graham, do you think that Canada benefits at least to some degree by having a parliamentary democracy? Because you can have, I understand. Well, you can have smaller parties that have actual representation in parliament. Now, I understand mm-hmm. that this most recent Canadian election, the Green, the party, the Bloc Québécois declined, the Green Party declined.
The NDP, most importantly.
Was it the New Liberals? Is that what it's called?
It's called the New Democratic Party.
New Democrats. Yeah. And so in a way, maybe right now, Canada is becoming more polarized as is
absolutely
as the U.S. is. But I think, for instance, you wonder if you go back to, say, way back, and forgive me, Daryl, for making a historical reference that's not related to this. But in 2000, if during that election, Ralph Nader's Green Party had been able to win votes in an American parliament, and then Gore and Nader could have formed a government, that might have been a better thing. But I would think, Graham, that Canada is better off with a parliament. I wish we had a parliamentary democracy.
Yeah. Well, there's the pros and the cons, basically. But you would have had a completely different outcome if Ralph Nader's votes were counted in that election, and you would have had a Gore coalition, I guess,
right,
in a parliamentary
exactly.
system. You wouldn't have had George W. Bush. And,
right.
you know, it is a disenfranchising thing in a lot of senses here with the United States system. A lot of people just don't get their vote counted, and it's for third parties, it's just a wasted vote. And the same can be said in Canada, though. I mean, if I vote the Green Party, it's like, it's frittered away, and I end up being a conservative or a liberal member of parliament. It's like, I just, so what? The popular vote is just the popular vote, and it just goes to, you know, yeah. the history books. Who cares? You know?
Here's another Biden-looking Uncle Sam.
Yeah.
You know, I have to say that a lot of Lord G's work is technically really well done. This is one of them, but a great many of the cartoons here. They're one of ways back with the windmill, just the way he had the donkey and the knight, I guess the kind of Don Quixote figure hanging from the, what do you call them, the fins, the sails of the windmill. Very, very well done. You know, Daryl, that's part of the thing maybe about Lord G's cartoons being that they are somewhat propagandistic. You know,
I may be propagandistic by definition because his employer newspaper is the government itself. And cartoonists who work for American newspapers, their employer newspaper has freedom of the press and they own the press. Freedom of the press only belongs to the person that owns the press. So,
but that's another reason why we're not, you know, we're not getting all excited about these cartoons.
Well, from what I know from other repressive regimes, I know quite a few Cuban artists. They don't tend to do anything really political. They tend to be very social, but very cutting in a way that you can't even do a lot of the content that you get in some of these Cuban papers. But they're more social commentaries than political commentaries because they're just used to having the same regime over and over, and there's nothing good to say about them. So they go after, you know, morals and that sort of thing that I think resonate more with readers than these somewhat propagandist. I hate to say this because he's a colleague and everything, but they tend to come off a little bit too from the Chinese government.
Well, and, you know, propaganda humor isn't very funny.
No, it's not.
You know, it's like Fox News humor isn't very funny. It's not satire.
We've got two Cuban cartoonists in Kegel Cartoons. Angel Boligan, who's the cartoonist in Mexico City, and Simonka, cartoonist in Brazil. And they're both brilliant cartoonists.
They're Cubans?
And they're both part of this Cuban cartoonist diaspora through South America that is, they all know each other and they're buddies, and they have this common shared excellence. There's a bunch of great cartoonists in Cuba, and odd that they would have developed that excellence in cartooning, given that they have virtually no place to publish.
Well, I think a lot of Latin American cartoonists have a great graphic sense. It's something that traces back to murals and their graffiti is a cut above American graffiti. They just have a way that way, I believe. And it's much admired. It's much in the culture. It's much, much admired.
And they're able to do it without words, which I find is quite fascinating.
Of course, I wonder, I'm just talking off the top of my head here. That's mostly what I do all the time anyway. But you figure that how many decades or longer did they have to kind of work in an underground kind of way because of the repressive regimes, the fascistic regimes that ran so many of Latin American countries?
Yeah. You know, it really makes you think. I mean, what do we do? Sometimes we just complain about attacks or something, and they're complaining about, you know, bombs going off and you know, a whole town being wiped out, one town over. And here we are complaining about, first world problems.
Daryl, could you go back to that previous cartoon? I think that's a fine cartoon. That's it's a little subtle, but I think it's a very good concept. What do you think?
Well, I noticed that the depiction of China for Luoji is this everyman sympathetic Chinese guy suffers from what's around him.
I didn't think he was Chinese, so forget what I just said. Because this everyman kind of looks like a just like an everyman American, but he's got dark hair. He doesn't look. I'm probably being a racist now, but he doesn't look Chinese to me. Does he to you?
We'll send a letter. Not looking Chinese enough. There he is again.
Yeah.
No, he's not wearing a Mao suit or anything like that. I mean, that would be obvious.
You know, Americans would put Uncle Sam into that position.
You know, I loved Oliphant's Uncle Sam because he was basically W.C. Fields, and he looked a lot like W.C. Fields, and he was fat, not the skinny Uncle Sam that so many of us.
Interesting. Yeah.
Well, I love the skulls in that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they love the light in the drawings.
Yeah, the powerful baller. Disney.
They do have quite a few editorial cartoons in China. And of course, Luoji draws for the government newspaper, but other newspapers aren't government newspapers, but their content is just as government newspaper-y as the government newspaper ones. There's no range of opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you have any cartoons? Are you going to be featuring Luoji cartoons? I guess we'll see, that aren't about the U.S.
No, I picked the ones that were about the U.S. The theme is China's view of the United States.
Okay, sorry. You can delete that part.
We gave a little bit of our view of China, but I think Luoji is very representative of at least the point of view you'd get from all the cartoonists in China. They have some range of styles, of course. I mean, they're pretty vast. They've got a vast bunch of cartoonists.
Yeah, and again, I mean, I could do this with beavers instead of monkeys. This is what's happening between Canada and the U.S. right now.
You should do just that cartoon, Grant.
Well, I might in the next 3.5 years. I'll just copy what this fellow is doing, and I think they're great. But you know, I'll become a propagandist for Canada. Do I want that? No. But I'm kind of doing that anyway. I'm doing that. That's the problem.
This is interesting. I kind of like this one. You might be right.
Is Luoji starting to convince you of the Chinese point of view, Taylor?
I'll tell you, I've done a lot of waterfall cartoons, and this is a great one, and just graphically a great one.
Well, I see Mr. Trump is going to be signing some kind of deal in the next month or so with China. I bet you anything.
He hasn't signed any trade deals yet, and they're talking about how they're going to do them, but I don't see anything happening towards that.
I think Canada, the United States, and a lot of Western countries are addicted to Chinese products, and there's no getting away from it. He can do whatever he wants, try to bring Chinese companies to America. It's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen.
Well, you know, it would really help our trade deficit if Americans didn't spend so much on so much stuff, myself included. And that would probably do better than tariffs, I think, in reducing our trade deficit.
Well, you got to unscramble the eggs that have been going on for, what, 25 years? Like, go to Target, go to Walmart. I've been there in the U.S., and they're all Chinese products. Good luck. You want to produce rag factories in, or you want to make rags in the U.S.? Good luck.
Really?
You're going after the semiconductors. You should be going after what they're doing. And I know you're doing that in New York State. I think Biden was talking about that when he was president, bringing these chip factories to New York State and other states of the U.S.
Well, I wonder what they should be going after. I mean, Trump's idea is that there's going to be so much winning. Everybody around the world is going to be winning, but we're going to be winning the most of all. And I find that a little, if you have in the middle of the baseball season, if you got a couple, two or three teams on a tear and they have over 600 average, you're going to have some teams with a 300 average. You can't get around it. So I don't know how everybody can win, but the United States is going to be the biggest winner of all. I just don't see how that works.
Well, you're in a trade agreement with my country. We signed this thing. He signed it the last time in 2018 or whatever, and he said it was the best deal ever. And now he's saying it's the worst deal ever.
Yeah,
well, which is it? And we've basically been, in the last three decades, we've been in a free trade agreement with the United States, and all of a sudden we're being told it's no good anymore. And we've been building cars for decades, and now we're being told that we're not going to help you out. He goes on saying we don't need Canada. Well, you do need Canada. You need Canada for a lot of resources and everything like that. What are you going to do? You're going to make us the, is that your plan to make Canada the 51st state in order to get those resources? That's not the way it happens. That's not the way it works. And I don't think a lot of Americans are buying it, even though Ms. Leavitt keeps talking about it. And again, I said this before to you, Daryl. Every time I hear him say it'd be nice for Canada to become the 51st state, every Canadian, there's 40 some odd million of us, wants to just punch him in the face every time he says that. It is just so offensive. And he says it like every other day, it seems. And it's galling, and it just makes us more anti-American. I love America. I'm married to an American. I go to America all the time. I'm the least anti-American person, but I'm becoming more anti-American by the day because of your president. And it's sad, and there's so much damage happening all the time.
Well, I'll tell you, Graham, your anger and disappointment throughout this podcast has seemed genuine. And of course, what's so strange about it is that wasn't true 2 years ago. Yeah.
Or 6 months ago, really.
By the way, do you think Trump even knows that Canada's made of provinces?
I've discussed this before, and it's like we're made up of like 13 provinces and territories, and we're a very rich country. We've been around for maybe 100 years less than the U.S., but we're one of the oldest. We're one of the oldest federations in the world. We're not like, we're also a G7 country. We fought against, tyranny back in the 40s. I know things have kind of gone downhill with Canada and the United States, but we've also bought into the American economy and we're partners with you. But all of a sudden, it just kind of ended a few months ago. And Trump wants, he doesn't want to have anything to do with us. And it's very offensive. And hopefully, we just sort of hope that, he's going to come around, and eventually we got a new prime minister. It was Justin Trudeau, teed him off so much with his socks and his wokey ways and everything. And hopefully the new prime minister will change everything. They're going to meet next week at the White House. It's going to be huge news. And we're going to hope that things turn around, but they won't. We got
like
3.5 years of
Keep in mind, Dan, that from our perspective here in California, we've got this long list of Trump issues. And one of them on the list is Canada. And it's a very long list.
You might become part of our country, California. You might come on.
I wonder if Trump were to succeed in absorbing the Canada into the U.S., British Columbia would become American Columbia. I guess it would have to.
I think Alberta has a better chance of becoming the 51st state than
Yeah, that's,
than,
that's
than
the thing, because
the
as
country.
I understand it, provinces like, well, I don't know, now I guess everything's changed, but a few years ago, provinces like Alberta and Saskatchewan, they almost would have been happiest states. And I mean, not really, but in terms of their political attitude.
I think the poll said that 20% of Canadians would be happy to become part of the United States. And that was alarming. Most of them live in Saskatchewan and Alberta, I think, although you have them scattered around. You'll find them all over the place, Nova Scotia and in British Columbia. But I think It will be very difficult, though, for Alberta, I think. The interesting thing that's happening is that Quebec is the normal separatist province in this country, and they've actually become more Canadian. They've realized we've got it better off being in Canada than, say, in the United States, because we will lose all of our cultural and linguistic rights if we become part of Trump's America.
Yeah.
So that whole thing has swung around, and that's part of the reason why Mark Carney won he won the first mandate, and it's up to Alberta, and things may get kind of dicey in the next few months, depending on how we go with our resource with the oil in Alberta and everything like that. And who knows, there may be more and more rhetoric towards Alberta becoming independent, whether it becomes more towards inclined to the United States or becomes an independent country, landlocked in North America, who knows? Anything can happen. It's exciting times in Canada. It's all because of Donald Trump, and you know, things are going to get interesting.
Well, you know, worried. We're worried he's going to rename some of those Great Lakes. So Lake Ontario.
Lake Melania.
Lake Trump.
Lake
Ivanka. Or Lake Melania or Lake Barron or whatever. Who knows?
Okay, gentlemen.
We can go back to you. We can go back to you now.
Thank you so much. And hey, please remember to subscribe to the Gagglecast. We really need for you to subscribe and support your cartoonists. Go to kaggle.com/subscribe and get our free daily cartoon newsletter. And come back for the next one, and it'll be a good one. Subscribe. Gentlemen, thank you again.
Thank you. Nice meeting you, Graham.
Good to meet you, Taylor.
I have so much editing to do on this one.
Oh, I'm sorry.
All right. Okay. All right, then. Bye, everybody.
All right. See you guys later.
Bye-bye.
And thank you so much, everybody.
My pleasure.